start right away from the beginning of the Sedra. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. Yaakov preempted a encounter with Esav, and Chazal find fault with Yaakov Avinu because of that. And they refer to him, the pasuk in Mishle, Ma'achez bo'ozne kelev mecharcher ariv lo lo, that a person who gets mixed in with a fight that's not his, mixes into a fight that he's not involved in, is like pulling a dog's ears. What are you looking for trouble for? Leave the dog alone. Don't start up with him. So too, Chazal said, Yaakov Avinu could have tiptoed back to Eretz Yisrael, snuck in, and not have to confront Esav. Why are you sending messengers to him and confronting him? You're looking for trouble. You're pulling the dog's ears. It seems that Chazal are telling us that one should avoid problems at all expenses. Don't look for trouble. Taking that in consideration, let me tell you a Rashbam. It says that Yaakov Avinu takes his family when he hears that Esav's coming, and he puts them on the other side of Mavr Yabok, a brook, and they're in relative safety. And then it says, Vayivoser Yaakov Levado, Yaakov is by himself, he separates himself from his family. So you are familiar with the famous Chazal that Yaakov forgot some earthenware pitchers and went back to get them. We're going to speak about that too. But the Rashbam says, what is the simple meaning of the psukim? Where was Yaakov going? He was safely together with his family. Why now is he separate from them? What happened? Says the Rashbam, Yaakov Avinu realized that Esav had no qualms against his family, no problems with his family. His family was safe. Esav's entire bone of contention was him. And therefore, Yaakov left his family and tried to run away. And an angel came, not the angel of Esav, but Yaakov's angel. The angel Michoel came and prevented Yaakov from running away. That was the fight with the angel. It wasn't that Yaakov was fighting with the angel of Esav. He was fighting with his own angel who came to prevent him from running away from Esav. Now those two things seem to be contradictory. In the beginning of the Sedra, Chazal fault Yaakov with confronting Esav. He should have avoided the confrontation. And now, according to the Rashbam, he is trying to avoid the confrontation by running away, and the Malach comes and forces him to confront Esav. So which is it? Should a person avoid confrontation or look for confrontation? These two things seem to be contradictory. I think the answer is very simple. And it's a very important lesson in life. A person should not look for problems. You should try to avoid problems as much as you can. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu could have avoided confronting Esav completely. He should have done it. But once the problem is there, you can't run away from it. You have to solve it. Solving it sometimes may be to change your place, to run away. But you're not running away to avoid the problem. That is the solution sometimes. But you have to face the problem and get a solution. That doesn't mean that sometimes running away from the situation is not the solution. But there's two ways to run away from a situation. I'll give you an example. Somebody has a lot of problems that they have to face in life. And they wake up in the morning and they say, I just can't face the world. And they turn over and go back to sleep. That's running away from problems and not confronting them and seeking solutions. That's wrong. That is never positive, never productive. On the other hand, person get up in the morning and say, I just don't have the koach today to face the world. And I think that if I get a good rest today, I'll be able tomorrow to cope with things better. That's fine. Both days you stay in bed. The one is doing it because you made a cheshbon, that this is what you need today to be able to function tomorrow. And the other one is running away from the problem, avoiding. That's normal. You should avoid problems before they start and try to preempt them. Yaakov, therefore, was wrong in confronting Esav. But once Esav's on the way, you can't run away. You have to somehow solve the problem. And again, sometimes the solution is to run away. But you're not running away in a negative fashion. You're running away because that's the solution. Sometimes you have to get out of a bad situation. Change a job, whatever it may be. But you're not running away. You've decided that the solution is to change. You need a change. Very big difference between running away from a problem and deciding that the solution is to change. Okay. Next. Any questions on this? Go to something else. Next. Yaakov Avinu tells Lavan, Im Lavan garti, v'taryig mitzvah shamarti, v'lo lamadati mimaisav haroi. Garti in gematria is taryag. Yaakov hints to Esav that he lived with Lavan and he kept all taryag mitzvahs and he didn't learn from Lavan's evil ways. Few things. First of all, how could Yaakov Avinu say taryag mitzvah shamarti? It's impossible to keep taryag mitzvahs in chutz laretz because some of the mitzvahs are only in the Beis HaMikdash, only in Eretz Israel. So a good portion of the taryag mitzvahs don't apply in chutz laretz. So how could Yaakov say taryag mitzvah shamarti? Beyond that, Yaakov Avinu, for whatever reason, he was allowed, married two sisters. Not marrying two sisters is one of taryag mitzvahs. So he only has 612 for sure. One of them for sure he didn't do. Whether he was allowed not to do it, whatever, it makes no difference. But he couldn't say, I kept all 613 mitzvahs because he married two sisters. So how did Yaakov Avinu say taryag mitzvah shamarti? So I think the answer could be the word shamarti does not mean that I fulfilled 613 mitzvahs. It could mean one of three things. Ushmartem es hamitzvos, many times Rashi says, means to learn about them. Shmiras hamitzvos is not necessarily kiyum hamitzvos. It's learning about them. And therefore Yaakov could say that I learned about all taryag mitzvahs. The ones I did, I could do, I did. And the ones I couldn't do, I learned about. And learning about a mitzvah that you can't do is like you did it. So therefore Yaakov said, taryag mitzvah shamarti. That's one possibility. Another possibility is, the word shomar does not necessarily mean to guard or to observe. V'aviv shomar es hadover, later on in Parshas Vayeshev, means that Yaakov Avinu waited anxiously, when will Yosef's dream come true? So the word lishmor means to wait anxiously, to await something, anticipate it. Yaakov Avinu said, here in Chutz La'aretz I can't do taryag mitzvahs, but taryag mitzvah shomarti, I waited anxiously when would come the day that I would be able once again to keep taryag mitzvahs. So taryag mitzvah shomarti means I anticipated, anxiously anticipated, keeping those mitzvahs in the future. And the third possibility is that Yaakov Avinu didn't necessarily keep taryag mitzvahs, and it could be never kept taryag mitzvahs. And nobody really has the ability to keep taryag mitzvahs, because some mitzvahs apply to Kohanim and some to Levim and some to Yisraelim and not to the other, and therefore nobody, one person, has taryag mitzvahs. What it means, shomarti, means that I, before a person can do a mitzvah, he has to have the right framework for that mitzvah. I think we spoke about it in Parshas Bereishis, that if you don't have the right outlook on life, the right standards, the right values, then mitzvahs are very difficult to keep. Because if your values and standards and outlooks on life are not Torah, they come from secular sources, then your wanting to keep mitzvahs conflicts many times with your lifestyle, with your values, with your standards. As I told you in the name of Rabbi Hollander, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that somebody who basically maintains secular values and standards, secular lifestyle, but he doesn't kosher, wants to keep mitzvahs, wants to do mitzvahs, he wants to be an observant Jew, but he doesn't want to have Jewish Torah standards, values, goals. So he doesn't have 613 mitzvahs. He has 613 problems. Because every mitzvah presents a problem. It is at odds, in conflict with his way of life, with his standards, his values. So in order to be able to observe 613 mitzvahs, you have to maintain a Torah lifestyle, Torah values, Torah standards, outlooks of Torah. And then the mitzvahs fit that framework. So Yaakov told Esav, Im lovan garti, the taryig mitzvah shomarti, I kept my ability to keep all taryig mitzvahs when they would apply, because I kept the environment I was in a Torah environment, even though I lived by lovan. I created my own Torah environment within his home, and therefore I wasn't influenced by his standards and his values. And if I would have been, then it would have been impossible for me to keep the mitzvahs in the future, because the mitzvahs would be a conflict to my way of life, to my standards and values and so on. So those are three possibilities of Tarig Mitzvah Shamarti. Either I learned about all the mitzvahs, or I anxiously awaited when they would take effect on me, whenever that may be, each one in its proper time and place, and I guarded my ability to keep Tarig Mitzvahs by maintaining a Torah environment in Lovin's home. Yes?
In all three, it seems like, let's say he's learning about it. So when he's learning about it, surely he would keep the ones that he could keep.
Yeah, that it.
But then he didn't, because he married two sisters.
Again, there was could be a reason why he was exempt from that mitzvah at the time. She says that the Avos only kept the mitzvahs that they felt that they were bound to do it in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, if they felt that there was a benefit in not keeping the mitzvah, right, then they didn't have to keep it because they weren't commanded, and the intrinsic effect of a mitzvah is only in Eretz Yisrael. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, not. So couldn't say that I fulfilled that mitzvah, but on the other hand, he had a reason why it was okay for him not to do it also. Okay, any questions more on this idea? Yes. Louder. The Aviv Shomares Hadover. Yaakov Avinu waited anxiously when Yosef's dream would be fulfilled. And then he boasted, V'lo lamadati mimaisav haroyim. I didn't learn from Lavan's evil ways. Two things. First of all, you see from here that it is possible to keep all Taryag mitzvahs and still not be able to say, V'lo lamadati mimaisav haroyim. It's possible to keep Taryag mitzvahs and still have learned from Lavan's evil ways. Yaakov had to add, not only did I keep Tariq mitzvahs, but I didn't learn from Lovin's evil ways, which is the opposite of what we spoke about until now. We said that in order to really keep mitzvahs, you have to create an environment, a lifestyle, a values and standards and outlooks on life that are compatible with Torah, that are Torah outlooks and Torah standards and Torah values. Because otherwise the mitzvahs are in constant conflict with your way of life and your standards and your values and your outlooks on life. And therefore, someone who doesn't do that can theoretically keep all Tariq mitzvahs, but he's basically keeping them in an environment that is not Torah. So he's learned from Lavan's evil ways in his values and standards and outlooks, but he's kosher. So he's a kosher goy. Basically, his lifestyle is secular, is the same as the goyim, but he does it kosher. Right? He's has the same values and standards as the goyish world, but he does it in a way that conforms with mitzvahs. Person for that will get rewarded for it. Don't want to make it nothing, something. But it's still not what the Rabbanu Shalom intended. The mitzvahs are not just a bunch of things to do, but they are windows, I think we once spoke about this, to Ratzon Hashem, to the Rabbanu Shalom's will. What does the Rabbanu Shalom want from me? We spoke about this at some point. If we didn't, I'm going to speak about it now. We speak about the fact that the Navi complains that Klal Yisrael keep the Torah, tzav letzav, a command here, a command there, and not doing Ratzon Hashem. I'll tell you what you'll remember, okay, if we did speak about it. If we did speak about it, I told you a maisa with a person who insulted his wife, embarrassed her because she didn't cover the challahs. Okay, then we did speak about it. Okay. There's Torah is there to mold your behavior, your personality, your standards, your values, your goals in life, your lifestyle. It's not merely a bunch of things to do. And if you do them, so it's like a game. You know, we pass go and go to Olam Haba. The Torah, the purpose of the Torah is that you should conform to the ideals and ideas of Torah. And the mitzvahs are there to encourage that. They're not to be done in a vacuum. Again, somebody who does them like that will definitely be rewarded. But that's not the real purpose. That's not what the Rabbanu Shalom really intended. He intended the Torah, the mitzvos, to mold your personality, mold your lifestyle, mold your values. And if a person just keeps a bunch of mitzvahs, but he doesn't have that kind of lifestyle and that kind of personality and those kinds of values, so he's learned from Lavan. He basically lives the life of Lavan, but he keeps mitzvahs. So he's the same glutton that Lavan is, except he eats kosher and Lavan eats straight. The Torah wanted by giving you the laws of kashrus that you shouldn't be a glutton. You should eat in a way that represents kedusha. Not that you eat the same way that some glutton eats, but you happen to eat kosher. Yes. To a certain degree, yes, but a person has to work on it too. And it's possible to keep the mitzvahs in such a shallow way that you maintain a totally non-Torah lifestyle and just do a bunch of things. Yeah.
When a child's brought up, the only way to bring up the child is to have them just doing the mitzvahs, and then by the time they get older and they start understanding, they're already doing it because
so that's why, as a child gets older, in the beginning for sure he's like a parrot, right? Just parrots brachas and parrots what he sees people doing, and that's good because you want somebody to get into the habit of doing something, so you condition them. But as they get older, then you have to give them also the ideas behind it. What is this supposed to engender in you? And as a child gets older, right, at 3 or 4, he can understand certain ideas. At 5 and 6, more ideas. Chinuch is not just conditioning a child to actions. but it's conditioning him to behavior, personality, character traits, derech eretz, right? Emuna, bitachen, so much more to emuna, to chinuch, than just rote. And when chinuch becomes just rote, then it makes big problems in what Klal Yisrael is. Okay. okay, any questions on this? There's another, the Chafetz Chaim says a different pshat. Lo lamadati mimais of harayim means that Yaakov said, yes, I kept all tarig mitzvahs, whatever that means. But I never learned from Lavan's evil ways how to do them really properly. You can learn from a Rasha too. Lavan used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to plan who he's going to cheat that day. He really put his whole heart and soul into his cheating, into his ramos. And Yaakov bemoaned the fact that even though I kept tarig mitzvahs, I never was able to learn from Lavan how to do it with the same gusto and the same interest and the same zeal that he did his averus. That's what it means, l'lamadati mimais of haroyim. I think the Kutzker Rebbe says, the reason that the emes in the world is not as successful as the sheker most of the time is because the people who perpetrate sheker do it with an emes. And the people who do the emes don't do it with such an emes. So if we would learn from how people who perpetrate sheker in the world do it with mesiras nefesh, do it with tremendous zeal and self-sacrifice, then our mitzvahs would be better. So Yaakov bemoaned the fact that he didn't learn from Lavan's evil ways how to do things in the right way with more zeal. Another pshat, they say, is you can learn from Rishoyim what not to do. Torah gives us examples of Rishoyim to let us know, don't be like them. And Yaakov said, I never learned from Lavan's evil ways enough what not to do. I didn't really learn the lessons in their most intense way. That's another pshat in Lo Lamadati Mimais of Haroyim. Yes.
Is there somewhere that it says there are certain Rishayim that you can't learn from Bichlal?
That you can't learn from them Bichlal?
I may be mistaken, but I thought that someone mentioned it in another shiur. I would have to look.
I don't know. Maybe Amalek. Because Amalek you have to destroy. So I don't know if there's any good. If there's no good redeeming value, then maybe there's nothing you can learn. But you can still learn what not to do. Yeah. Right.
Is that what he did or he didn't?
No, so the Chafetz Chaim says that Yaakov said, Lo lamadati mimais of haroyim, I didn't learn from Lavan how to do my mitzvahs with the same enthusiasm he did his averus. So he was criticizing himself. He wasn't bragging. Okay, next. Go back to Yaakov leaving his family, putting him on the other side of Mavre Yabok, and all of a sudden, Vayivasa Yaakov Levado. So Chazal say that Yaakov Avinu forgot some earthenware pitchers, Pachim Kitanim, and he went back to get them. Now Yaakov Avinu was a very rich man. Pachim Kitanim are small earthenware pitchers. Earthenware is worth almost nothing. It's a few pennies. And Yaakov Avinu put his life in danger, basically, to go and fetch a few pennies worth of earthenware pitchers that he could have replaced, a thousand times over. So the Gemara says, from here we learn, Tzadikim chavivim aleihem mamonam yoser migufa. Tzadikim, their money is more precious to them than their body. The kol kach lama, and why is it so precious? She'ein poshtim yideim begezel, because they don't steal. Now this is a very, very strange chazal. Because if you would think that tzadikim, money is not important altogether. And here chazal say that tzadikim, their money is more precious than their body. What does that mean? I mean, if you don't have a body, the money is useless. So how could the money be more important than your body? In addition, at least this answers another question, but doesn't really explain what's going on here. The other question is the following. In Kriya Shema, it says, V'yohavta Hashem Elokecha, v'chol levavecha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol me'odecha. So Chazal say, v'chol levavecha is with both your hearts. You should serve the Rabbanu Shalom with the Yetzer HaTov and the Yetzer Hara. Even the things that normally are Yetzer Hara, you should channel for the good. V'chol nafshecha, even if God demands that you give up your life. Rather than serve idolatry and abandon God, you have to give up your life for God under certain circumstances. And if v'chol me'odecha means you have to give up all your material possessions, your money, for God. So the Gemara asks very simply, if I already know I have to give up my life for God, I can't serve Avodah Zarah to save my life, then of course I have to give up all my money. If I have to give my life, of course I have to give my money. So why do you have to say b'chol ma'odecha, to give your money? So Chazal say, ki yesh b'nei adam shemamonam chavivim aleim yosem migufat. There are people whose money is more precious to them than their life. And for those people, the Torah had to say, not only do you have to give your life for God, you have to give your money too. Because the money is more precious to them. Now, without this second Gemara that we mentioned before, that Gemara is very difficult. Because of some Meshugayim in this world who value their money more than their life, the Torah had to go out of its way to say, not only do you have to love God more than your life, you have to love more than your money too. You have to give up your money for the Rabbanu Shalom too. Somebody who values their money more than their life is crazy. No, you have to be somebody who's not normal. And there are plenty of people like that. How do I know? Because there are people who work themselves to death just to make more money. They neglect their families. They neglect their health. They literally work themselves to death just to have more money. So they value their money more than their life, more than their family, more than their life. So there are people like that. But those people, something wrong with them. So the Torah had to go out of its way to say an extra word, b'chol me'odecha, in order to satisfy or to deal with people who are crazy. There used to be an entertainer, I don't know if you ever heard of him, his name was Jack Benny. Jack Benny portrayed a character who was a tremendous miser, didn't want to part with his money for anything. And there was a scene where a robber came, put a gun to his head, and said, your money or your life? And there's silence. He said it again, your money or your life? He said, I'm thinking. Give me time. That's a meshugana, right? So for that person, you need a pasuk b'chol me'odecha? So the answer is, we're not talking about meshugoyim. We're talking about tzaddikim. Tzaddikim chavivim aleihem mamonam yosem migufan. Tzaddikim value their money more than their life. Okay, so now we understand that the pasuk in Kriya Shema is for tzaddikim, but we don't understand why tzaddikim are out of their mind. Tzaddikim value their money more than their life. That's a tzaddik. Just because they don't steal. So let me tell you what I think. Based on the following. I once heard from Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal at a convention. He said the following. It was Parshas Vayishlach. And he said, later on in the Sedra, Yaakov Avinu is begging Esav to take his present. And Esav says, no, I don't need your present. I'm rich. Yeshli Rav, I have more than I need. I'm an excessively rich man. I don't need your presents. Keep your present. And Yaakov says, no, please, take the present. Because I have everything I need. So you take the present. So Moshe asked, L'cha'ora, if anybody should have said, I have whatever I need, was Esav. Yaakov should have said, I have more than I need. Yaakov was a millionaire. He wouldn't have been happy if he was a poor person. He's only happy if he's rich. And therefore Yaakov said, Yesh li kol, I have everything I need. Mashma, he had nothing more. Just what he needs. And he was a millionaire. And if he would have been only, what's it called, a person with $1,000, he wouldn't have been happy. He wouldn't have had everything he needs. Esav, on the other hand, was also a millionaire. Right? Esav said, I have more than I need. Meaning, I would have been happy if I had less than that too. But I have more. I'm happy to have more. Yaakov should have said, I have more than I need. Not that I have everything I need. So, Rav Moshe said the following. He didn't say exactly what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to dress it up a little bit so you'll understand it better. When a person comes in this world, he has a part to play. God created each and every one of our neshamas to be part of a totality of the purpose of this world. And everyone has a part in that totality. It's like a big puzzle. Every piece in the puzzle is important. And they're all different pieces, all different parts. And each part is supposed to contribute its unique part towards the whole and benefit from the rest, from all the other people's unique parts. It's like a play. A play, no one person makes a play. The play has many, many parts. And each part contributes towards the completion, the perfection of that play. So if you have a play where there's a king and a queen and a court jester, so each one has his part, his lines to say, where in the stage he stands, when he comes onto the stage, his part is according to where he is and when he is and what he is. And he also gets a costume to go along with his part. And he also gets props to go along with his part. So too, person that comes into this world, he gets a costume to fit his part. It's called a body. And your body fits your part. And you also get props. It's called material possessions. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you what you need for your part in this world. And therefore, let's say the king has one change of clothing, a robe, right, royal clothing to wear, and that through the entire play wears that same robe, and he has one prop, a scepter and a crown. That's it. Two props. Crown and a scepter. Same thing with the queen. The court jester has five different changes of clothing, and he has 10 props. Bowling balls and pins and a million different things for juggling. You can't say that the court jester is more important than the king and queen because he has more props. But his part is different. And to fulfill the part of the court jester, he needs more parts. He needs more props. The king doesn't need that. Can you say that the court jester has more than he needs because the king only has 2 props and he has 10? No. He has exactly what he needs. Because that is what the court jester needs to be a court jester. 10 props. The king has exactly what he needs, only 2 props. If you understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu apportions out to each person his part in this world, his tafkid, and his costume, and his props, then there is no concept of more than I need. You have exactly what you need to do your part. That is the concept of a tzaddik, how he looks at his money. His money is a kli for avodas Hashem. It's a utensil to be used in service of the Rabbanu Shalom, as much as his body is to be used in service of Hashem, as much as his neshama. I have a part in this play, and I use my costume and my props and me to fulfill that part. That part. If that's the case, then let's go back to the tzaddikim chavivim aleihem. First of all, it doesn't say that a tzaddik's money is more important than his money. More important than his body. His money is more important than his body. It doesn't say, what's it called? Tzaddikim chashuvim aleihem amonim yosem igufa. It says chavivim aleihem. Chaviv means something is more precious to you. It may not be more important, but it's more precious. What makes something precious? The more effort you put into something, the more precious it is. It may not be as important, but it's more precious because I worked on it. I put in effort. Something that comes easy, you don't appreciate as much, it's not as precious to you. It may be more important, but it's not as precious. If a tzaddik views his body as a keli for avodas Hashem, and he views his money as a keli for avodas Hashem, okay, let's see now how much effort you have to put into both of them, which would make the one that requires the more effort the more precious. How much effort do you have to put into acquiring your body? None. It's a birthday present. First birthday, you're given a body for free. Okay? You're born with it. You don't have to put any effort into getting it. You have to put effort into maintaining your body, eating, taking care of it health-wise, and in using it. So out of three possible efforts, acquisition, maintenance, and use, how many of them apply to the body? Two out of three. Maintenance and use, but not acquisition. You don't have to put any effort in getting your body. How about your money? So it depends. If you steal, then you may be able to acquire your money easily. But if you don't steal, and you earn everything honestly, then every penny is an effort to earn. Right? You have to put in a lot of effort to earn money honestly. So you have to put effort to acquire your money, you have to put effort to maintain your money, and you have to put effort into using your money. So out of three possible efforts, all three apply to the money, and only two of them apply to the body. And if both of them are utensils to be used, right, in service of Hashem, which one is the more precious one? The one you put more effort into. So tzaddikim chavivim aleim amonim yosher migufam. Tzaddikim, their money is more precious to them than their bodies, because both of them in their eyes are something to be used in service of Hashem, and the one that requires more effort is more precious. And why is it so precious? Because they don't steal. Because if they would steal, then there wouldn't be any effort necessary in acquiring your money either. Steal it. But if you have to earn it honestly, it doesn't come easily. I think that could be a legitimate way of learning this chazal. Just to show you how far it goes, that a tzaddik money, a tzaddik does not ignore his money. If the Rabbanu Shem gave him material possessions, the ability to buy things, to have things, then he knows that he has to use it somehow in avodas for avodas Hashem. And that is more precious than even how he uses his body. There's a medrash that, based on this, you can understand. Without this, is a medrash. I don't know of any other meaning in the medrash. The medrash says in Parshas Vayera that when Avram and Yitzchak were on the way to the Akedah, the Satan came and started putting thoughts in the head of Avram to make him have doubts whether he's doing the right thing. So the Satan came and said, "You've gone out of your mind. Obviously, God didn't tell you to murder your son. You just are hallucinating." Right, you are schizophrenic. You're hearing voices. This can't be. God didn't tell you to murder your son. You've gone off the deep end, Avram. Avram said, "Afal pi kein, I'm not going to argue with you. I know that God told me." Finished. He said, "Okay, you know what's going to happen tomorrow? Tomorrow, God is going to accuse you of murdering your son. You're not going to get out of this." Avram says, "Afal pi kein, I know that God told me, and I have no question." So he saw he's getting nowhere with Avram. So he went to Yitzchak. And he said to Yitzchak, "Broda Lufsa, your poor mother. What's going to happen to your poor mother, Sarah? She waited 90 years for you. And now you're going to go be killed? You're going to be shechted? Your mother's going to hear it? What's going to happen?" According to the simple meaning over there in Chayi Sarah, Shitaka died from the fright of even hearing that Yitzchak was almost shechted. "So what's going to be with your poor mother?" Yitzchak said, "I'm sorry, but my father told me that God said we have to do this. I can't question it." So then the Satan said the following: "Do you know all the toys that your mother made for you, when you are slaughtered, are going to go to Yishmael. At that point, Yitzchak said to his father, Avi, let's reconsider this. Maybe it's not such a great idea to go to the Akedah. His mother's dying. Can't question this. God said to do it. My mother, Nevuch, but can't affect me. But the toys that my mother made for me are going to go to Yishmael? That I can't take. Why? Because Yitzchak said, look, if I'm going on Kiddush Hashem, and my body is going to be slaughtered for the sake of the Rabbanu Shalom, what could be better than that? I may affect my mother adversely, but I can't take it. The Rabbanu Shalom told me I have to do this. And I'm willing to give up my body, Shem Hashem. But the toys that my mother made for me are supposed to be things that I'm going to use for Avodas Hashem. Not only aren't they going to be used for Avodas Hashem if I get slaughtered, but they're going to be taken over and used for the opposite, for a Chilul Hashem by Yishmael, then maybe the whole Akedah is not worth it. Because maybe what I can do with my money is more precious than dying Al Kiddush Hashem. Maybe living Al Kiddush Hashem and using all the things that I have in this world is more precious than dying Al Kiddush Hashem. That's what it means. So therefore, Tzadikim Chavivim Aleihem Mamonim Yosher Migufan. Yes. Yeah, his question was, maybe Taka, the Rabbanu Shel Olam, what's it called, didn't really say that that's what we should do. Considering the fact that there could be a greater Kiddush Hashem, maybe you're making a mistake.
So he was down in one
or right. But what prompted him? The thought that maybe all that money would not be used, whereas his mother dying didn't bother him that much. I mean, it bothered him, but that's not something to reconsider. Yeah. Right, that's why it doesn't say that it's more important. Obviously, if you die without your body, you can't do anything. But it's an idea of preciousness. The body's for sure more important, because without a body, you can't have money either. But given the fact that what can I accomplish with both of them, what's more precious to me? What I accomplish with my money.
But you can not accomplish
more with your body than your money. Lav dafka. Why? No, I hear that, but it could be that, right, if you don't have a body, you can't accomplish with money either. But when you're being able to accomplish with both, the tzaddik considers what he accomplishes with his money more precious to him because he put more effort into it. Whereas whatever he accomplished with his body was with less effort. Because one kind of effort doesn't apply by the body at all. You don't have to acquire it with any kind of effort. Okay. Next. Shimon and Levi kill out the whole city of Shechem. They could have killed just Shechem and Hamor to get Dinah. Dinah was being held, basically kidnapped, after she was attacked and violated. And they're holding her, and now they wanted to marry. It's a terrible, terrible affront, both to Dina, to Klal Yisrael, to the Rabbanu Shel Olam, to treat a Jewish girl like that. And Shimon and Levi decide that they are going to take the law in their own hands. And not only are they going to kill Shechem and Hamor and get their daughter, their sister, back, they're going to avenge Dina's honor. So they kill the whole city out. Yaakov Avinu says to them, you have put a sword in the hands of the Goyim now. Now they have an excuse. They say we're a bunch of murderers. We killed a whole innocent city. They didn't do anything. They didn't deserve to die. They weren't liable to a death penalty. And even if they were, you weren't the ones to carry it out. So they're going to say that we killed innocent people, and therefore they're going to use that as an excuse to kill us. So you've put the entire Klal Yisrael, the fledgling, developing Jewish nation, into danger of being annihilated. And righteously so, by the Goyim, who are going to say, we're killing a bunch of murderers. Jews are occupiers. They are, what's it called, cruel, whatever it may be. You put a sword in their hand. So Shimon and Levi give an answer that Yaakov doesn't answer to them. Hakizona yaseh sachosenu? Should we let our sister be treated like a harlot? She's not Hefker, and we want to make a statement and let them know you can't treat a Jewish girl like this. And the world will learn a lesson from it. Okay. And Yaakov doesn't argue with him. Keeps quiet. And in the end, nothing happened. It says that they went, and the Rabbanu Shalom protected them, and nobody chased them, and nobody used this as an excuse, and Yaakov's fears were unfounded. Okay, so you would assume that Shimon and Levi won the argument. When Yaakov is blessing his children on his deathbed, what does he say to Shimon and Levi? Shimon and Levi, ach, Shimon v'Levi achim, klei chomos mecheroseihem. They used stolen means. They took Esav's means to do what they had to do. Right? Or apom kios, he cursed their anger. L'chora, Shimon and Levi were vindicated. Why? Yaakov had no answer for them. Right? They says, this way we should let him treat our sister like this? And in the end, Yaakov cursed their anger and basically made a statement, you were wrong. Nothing bad happened? The answer is that kanos is very good, but it needs responsibility. Let me tell you a story that happened to me many, many years ago. And it happened taka in Parshas Vayishlach, and I either Vayishlach or Vayechi, and I made my Shabbos drosha because of it. Basically, what I'm going to tell you. I lived in Miami, and I was a rabbi there in the shul. I grew up in Miami, but I happened to be a rabbi in the shul in Miami. And I had traveled to New York to attend a dinner, and I got off the plane, and I took a bus into Borough Park. That's where I was staying. And I got off in the periphery of Borough Park in those days. It wasn't as widespread as it is today. And that, the periphery of Borough Park, basically was inhabited by Puerto Ricans. I got off the bus, and I see a public school, and there is television cameras and radio microphones and all newspapers and a big crowd at this public school, some kind of rally or protest, something going on. So I asked somebody, it was Goy, Puerto Ricans. So I asked somebody, what's going on? They said that some Jewish boys from a certain group, which I won't mention the name of the group, there was some firebombings of shuls around that time. Right? The Goyim were firebombing some of the shuls in Borough Park. And two Jewish teenagers from this organization, this group, decided that they are going to teach these Goyim a lesson. They didn't necessarily know who were firebombing the shuls, that they got the perpetrators. They just picked a few Puerto Ricans off the street, and they beat them up. And to teach them that Jews don't take this sitting down, and we're going to, what's it called, and these boys who were beat up were what's it called, innocent. They weren't the guys who were firebombing the shuls. They were just picked arbitrarily to teach everybody a lesson. Okay. So they were big kanoim to avenge Jewish honor. You're not going to firebomb shuls and get away with it. We are going to make a statement. And the statement was made not at the expense of the people who perpetrated the firebombing, but just arbitrary people picked off the street. Okay. So they had this big protest that these innocent boys were beaten up by these Jewish boys. So, fine. So they told me what was going on, and I kept walking, trying to get into the Jewish part of Borough Park. And I look up, and I see that there are four Puerto Ricans holding iron poles in their hands, surrounding me, one on each side. First, I thought maybe this was an honor guard that they sent to escort me into Borough Park. But then I realized that it probably wasn't that. And they say to me, you know, your friends beat up our friends. I said, I have no friends here. I come from Miami, and I don't know anybody here. I have no idea what you're talking about. So he said, well, you're never going to go back to Miami. So I realized it probably was pretty serious. And they were holding these iron poles, and they were about twice my size. And I started to, under my breath, say Tehillim. But I wanted to keep talking to them, because I figured if I keep talking to them, they'll forget about what they want to do. So I said to them, could you tell me who these people are and what they did? Right? They're surely not my friends, because I don't know anybody here. I'm from out of the state. I just came in now. So tell me what it was. What happened? So they start to talk to me and tell me or whatever. And we're walking along and talking. And then we come to the corner. And I said to them, it's been very nice talking to you, but I really must go now, and I have to go this way, so it's nice knowing you. I turned the corner, and they kept walking straight. Mamash anes. As soon as I got out of their view, I ran as fast as I could. I probably could have beat an Olympic record at the time. I never ran faster in my life. When I got back to Miami, the drush of that Shabbos was the following. These people thought, these boys who beat up these Puerto Ricans thought they were avenging Jewish honor. But who gave them the right to put my life in danger? There has to be a certain amount of responsibility also of what the implications are. What are you accomplishing by avenging Jewish honor if you're putting Jewish life into danger? So somebody who has broad shoulders, a Gadol b'Yisrael, who has on his shoulders the achrayus for Klal Yisrael, can make that decision. Is it worth avenging Jewish honor? At the same time, maybe you're putting other people into danger. And they have to weigh it out. What's more important? But somebody who does it without any irresponsibly, they have no right to do such a thing. That's exactly what Yaakov Avinu said. You were lucky. Baruch Hashem, it worked out. But you can't function like that. You have to function with responsibility. I think Nechama Leibowitz says, I should quote somebody, that none of the names of God, God has a lot of names, Rachum, Chanun, a lot of kinuyim, right? A lot of, words that imply godliness, merciful, God is gracious, right? These are euphemisms for God. There is no euphemism for God called success. Just because something's successful doesn't mean that it's divine, that it's godly. There are a lot of ungodly things in this world that are successful. Just because Shimon and Levi were successful, what they did doesn't make it right. That's what Yaakov told them. You may have lucked out. Nobody bothered us. But you did something irresponsible that could have come to, endangering the entire Jewish people. You have no right to do such a thing. You know, in the 1960s, so there was groups to free Russian Jewry. And there were different opinions how to do it. The Gedolim, the Moshe Feinstein at the time and others held that the way to do it was behind the scenes, through diplomacy. Not through mass protests or whatever, because they saw that whenever there are mass protests against the Soviet government in America, so the Soviets took it out on the Jews in Russia. So who had the right to, you know, we're going to champion Jewish honor at whose expense? The Russians aren't going to put you into Siberia and beat you up. They're going to take some poor Russian Jews and throw them into Siberia and beat them up. But you're being a big shot, right? We're going to show that, you know, you can't do this to Jews. We're going to champion Jewish honor at whose expense? At some other poor Jew's expense. So the Gedolim held that that's not the way to champion Jewish honor. So you won't look so good publicly. Do it behind the scenes in a way that you will do it diplomatically and not endanger anybody. Nobody's going to suffer because of your wanting to protest Jewish honor. But there are many who held not like that. and irresponsibly were the cause of many Jews who suffered because of these protests. And even if in the end they were successful, but again, success is not a euphemism for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to do what's right. You have to do what is responsible. Not do irresponsible things and then hope that it'll work out. You have to do what is the right thing to do. That's what Yaakov Avinu had complaints against Shimon Halevi.